Right, hello and welcome to our brand new episode of Science with Knob Jokes.
Woo.
Great.
Science with Knob Jokes.
I'm Dr. Sam Godfrey, your inspirational... What would you call me? Leader?
Not that.
No, not that. Those dulcet tones. Any keen-eared listeners will see I'm joined by the overpowering grace of Miss Daisy Eyre.
Thank you. That's such an overwhelming introduction.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, good. On with the show.
Go on then.
So, for any new listeners out there, this whole premise of the show is we talk about science and exciting science. I'm a scientist. Daisy is a
scientist also, yep.
Theologian, so she has a different perspective.
I mean, it's basically science.
And I talk about science and Daisy...
Talks about the science with
me. Talks about science with me and then decides whether it's good science.
Because I think, I mean, I'm the arbiter of these things, aren't I?
Yeah, there we go.
I think if anybody out there could decide what's good science...
If anyone's fit to.
It's probably someone with a degree in theology.
There, exactly. Yeah. So that's the whole premise of the show. And we're going to kick things off this week with...
Fit science.
Foie.
First thing, the moon, Saturn, the planet...
Saturn the planet.
Saturn
is that?
The planet, yeah.
Not the other Saturn.
It's probably something other Saturn. There's a type of car. There's a Sega
game
console.
Do you know what? I think I would have assumed Saturn the planet.
Right,
but
fine.
Thank you for the clarification.
Just in case. Got to be specific. Saturn the planet. So after space probes flew past, they can work out what the kind of makeup of the planet is, what sort of molecules are there and so on. Titan, the moon of Saturn, is covered in sand dunes. And when they did an experiment taking grains of sand that are of similar makeup in the same sort of atmosphere pressures and things in a lab, what they found is they became really electrostatically charged.
Mm.
And when they were studying how the sand dunes are formed, not in the direction you'd expect them to be if the wind was blowing to shape the sand dune. And they think that perhaps they're being shaped by electrostatic charms, which means that this Titan, the moon of Saturn, is actually covered in electric sand dunes.
Shut up.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Pretty cool. And then I was thinking, like, I mean, I don't know what kind of life is out there in the wider universe. What if there's some kind of little things that can feed off electricity and charge up in the surface of this organic, shifting, electrified sand?
I mean, you're just thinking of any sort of appliance, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. But living, I mean, I'm basically thinking this is like sci-fi coming
yeah.
around. Like, you can see them in Star Trek landing on an electric planet and they have to wear rubber boots and stuff.
Where do they get the rubber from, Sam?
Well, they've flown. They've gone prepared, haven't they?
Okay, great.
Yeah. Astronauts don't go on ill-equipped.
Oh, I thought you meant the creatures were wearing rubber
oh,
boots.
Oh, no. The creatures are, like, feeding in on the electric fields and powering themselves up with it. And
anything could be going on out there, really, couldn't it?
Yeah. So, anyway, does that grab your attention?
Right. Space... in a very general sense, is like a beauty I don't understand.
Right.
So, you know when you see someone who's beautiful but also a bit ugly at the same time?
Like some of the high fashion models.
Yeah, or like that guy who's in Star Wars. I don't watch Star Wars. The one who's like attractive and not attractive at the same time.
In the recent Star
yeah,
Wars?
Yeah, in the recent Star Wars.
I mean, I've seen one of them.
Adam Driver, I want to say.
I have no idea.
It's like, it's...
Let us know on Twitter.
Yeah, please tell me. It's like great to look at, but also sort of terrible at the same time because it's too much for my brain.
A bit like me.
No.
I'm just good to look at.
No.
Well, I'm glad I know where I stand. Excellent. Okay, so that's
how I feel about space.
Right. Okay. And electric sand dunes
because I can't comprehend it.
Is in that same sort of
well, it's on Saturn
sphere.
The planet, isn't it? So yes.
Cool.
Because I can't work out how it all happens.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
to
it
you?
Does make sense.
Yeah,
it does.
It's too big, too eight, too alien,
which is exactly what it is.
Rubber boots and all, yeah.
Well, there we are. Okay, that's good. That was good. Thank you. Yeah. I think the next one, I'm pretty confident you're going to like.
You don't know me.
No, you're right, but humpback whales whisper to their mother.
Oh, I do like that.
when whales return from the breeding grounds, they go to specific places to breed. The mother is then often fasting on the long journey back, and the baby whale, is suckling from the mother. And in order to suckle, what they do is they go super quiet and they communicate back and forth. But the sound they make, because whales can be heard from thousands of miles away, and the sounds they can only be heard within about 100 meters.
Oh,
so they're whispering to each other, and it's obviously part of the feeding and bond. But it's also to stop them from having predators overhear them in this vulnerable state. But also because male humpback whales are like ruin everything and go crashing around, and they don't want
not
to
just
be
male humpback whales.
Males. God, we're the worst.
Terrible.
We are terrible. But whilst this is like a beautiful thing, this like mum and baby whispering to each other in the ocean. The people that wrote this paper have postulated that actually human interference, noise like boats and so on, because they're so quiet and they need to be able to hear each other, potentially human activity could end up separating mother whale with baby whale.
Stop the humans.
Stop the humans, yeah.
Stop the men and their boats.
Yeah, so we should only have rowing boats.
Yeah.
Only have rowing boats out to sea.
Leave the whales alone.
Yeah.
Let them whisper.
I love whales.
I do.
They're lovely. And it always gets a bit upsets me when I think it's like Japan and Norway. Kill whales for research. Yep, this one's made of meat as well. So how many times? Oh, we've got to test it millions of times before we can be certain they're all made of meat. Seriously.
I mean, I suppose it's good to be sure. But no, it's not. I don't mean that. I love whales. I like that bit of science. I like to know they whisper to each other.
Yeah.
But that's because I like to anthropomorphize things.
Yeah, I
know. I just think it's lovely.
Yeah,
very lovely.
And they are clever. I mean, they have.
I never said they weren't.
Whales have like probably a language of their own. They certainly. I'm sure I read, and I'm not sure how they work this out, but someone wrote somewhere that whale song rhymes. Now, assume that must
they
be
speak
pitch
in iambic pentameter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Oh no, limericks. It's less crazy than that. Just these crass limericks that they send out across the sea.
The answer's a whale from Japan.
Oh, I want to carry that on, but I know I'll just disappoint myself, so I'm not
going
to.
You'll disappoint us all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that one.
Yes, know. I love.
Good. Nice.
It's just lovely.
Oh, there we go.
The idea of it.
Yeah, it is lovely, isn't it? It's really warm.
Yeah.
Now, this one you may have seen in the news recently. I don't know if you saw the thing about the underwater dogs in
No.
Okay, so this is a little bit disturbing, but there's valid reason for it. So in Russia, they have developed this liquid that you can breathe in. So it's basically it's a perfluorocarbon, which is densely saturated with oxygen. So that if you inhale this into your lungs can still transfer oxygen to and through like you're breathing air. And the way they tested this is they got vats of it. Now, it was horrible. I saw the video and it made me a bit upset. They dunked the dog in this vat. The dog obviously struggles around for a while until eventually it then breathes in the liquid into its lungs. But then it breathes quite normal, and they've had dogs underwater for 30 minutes at pressures of like 1,000 meter deep and so on. And just able to freely breathe, and there's been no reported ill effects of it. They obviously got under a lot of criticism for this.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's like the foreign secretary of Russia or something ended up adopting one of the dogs as a kind of a PR gesture.
Well, that's okay then.
Yeah, great.
I don't have a problem necessarily with medical research in animals.
No.
But for something like this, which doesn't seem altogether necessary.
So, I thought this as well. If you know science, you know, unfortunately, as unpleasant as animal research is, it's the only way you're going to be able to progress.
Bring new drugs to market and things
like
that.
And even just understand stuff, because you can't understand without looking.
No.
Apparently the reasons behind it, so I looked into what it's for. One would be for premature babies whose lungs aren't ready to breathe air yet. One's burns victims, because they're under a real risk of infection, and people with complete burns, I mean really severe burns, rarely make it.
Yeah.
So the idea being they'd be suspended in this liquid tank to allow them to heal and just breathe through that. And then the final one, and I thought this was really interesting, is rescuing people who are trapped in submarines. Because one of the problems you have of people trying to come up from low pressures is the bends. So the idea, I think, would be to breathe in the liquid, and then when you come up, that liquid's not going to change so much, so you're unlikely to get the bends.
Well, that's quite clever, really.
I think. But how do you feel about that one?
I don't know. I suppose the idea of animal research is always unpalatable, even when it's for a good reason.
Yeah, no one likes it. Scientists that do it don't enjoy it.
So I don't like the idea of the poor dogs feeling nervous or uncomfortable. But then I suppose the idea of this liquid is quite useful.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit torn on that one, to be honest.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's probably got an ugly face but a good heart.
I thought you were going to say a good body. I thought you were going to say
no, good heart.
Right, okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's got a good soul.
Okay.
I think it means
it's coming from
well,
the right place.
But it just
but it's not something you want to have like
Cyrano de Bergerac or something. Yeah.
Bergerac, wasn't that crime show with John Nettles? It's like predates Midsummer Murders. Is that not what you're talking about?
No, the book about the guy with the massive nose, the French book. Okay.
No, but you're
we
more
can cut that out.
You're more worldly than me. You know these things. And no, we will cut it out because I've just probably everyone goes, yeah, Cyrano de Bergerac, and I said, well, the guy from Midsummer Murders. showing my excellent depth of knowledge there. Okay, cool. Well, thank you. So that was a mixed bag there. Really.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
We've got
obviously, I love the whales.
Alien, unusual looking. Oh my god, I love the whales and ugly face but nice heart. So. That's today's Fit Science.
Sam's meaty story.
This is not so much a science story, more of a science discussion.
Because I don't know if I'm up to this.
It's something I overheard on the train the other week, which made me laugh a lot. I overheard someone saying, yeah, I know what you mean, mate, but I think elephants are more intelligent than they let on.
They let on. Yeah. I love the idea. They're just like, play dumb.
Okay, he's gone. So I thought about this and I started to just do a little bit of reading because I like elephants anyway. They're probably my favourite animal, I think.
Do you think?
Yeah, I love an elephant.
I prefer cows.
Cows are nice. There's the serene wisdom of a cow.
That's what I always think. Yeah. Lovely faces.
They have got lovely faces. Mm. You're right. You see that? I saw a video of a young woman in the US somewhere who's trained her cow as a horse and she rides it around and it does like dressage and stuff and jumps.
God, I bet she has to work hard at that.
Yeah,
I love that.
So. Yeah, this has been sort of in the back of my mind. Every now and again, I read a little bit of elephant news because I'm excited by them. But then I was in Stuttgart about 2 months ago, and I was at the Stuttgart Zoo. But I wasn't paying. I was on a bridge that looks over the zoo because it's free. And I was sort of looking at the elephant enclosure, and two of the elephants were off having something done to them, no idea what, by the keepers. And one of the elephants had been put in this little temporary enclosure where they'd put this electrified wire across one side of it. So it was a nice enclosure, it had a river and trees and stuff. I mean, it was a lot of space for it. But it obviously wanted to be where the other two elephants were. But there was this electrified wire. And then I watched as the elephant went to the other side of its enclosure, picked up a big branch off the tree, went up, laid it on the electrified wire, put its foot down, walked across the thing.
Oh my God, it's a freaking genius.
It nearly got out, but then it realised it had to lift its foot and the wire was going to spring back up. And you were watching it as it was trying to puzzle this out. And I had to leave to go and get a train, so I didn't get to see the end of it. However, I have actually taken pictures, which I can't show you because I don't know where they are, but I will, I've taken pictures of the process because I was so impressed with it. And then it got me to read about elephants, sort of what other things they do, which is incredible. And so they have funerals, for example.
I've heard about this.
Yeah. Like, it's so cool.
Which I think is amazing.
Yeah, like death rites, they spin round and trumpet and they collect the bones, and there's a fascination with elephant bones. Even if they find them years later, they're really obsessed with elephant bones, but not other animals' bones. They have probably a rudimentary language of like 50 or 60 different sounds, but they're too deep for us to hear.
That we know of.
Well, exactly. I mean,
they've actually got old dictionaries.
Maybe it's
like
their trunk movements are part of it as well and stuff. Who knows? But they, we didn't know this until we started listening to infrasound, like really deep sound, and there were noises they're making that we can't hear when they're talking to each other, effectively. And then matriarch elephants, like the head of the herd, if an elephant gets sick, they will often go to specific trees, pick the leaves from those trees and give them. And those leaves contain salicylic acid, which is the chemical that's in aspirin.
God, that's so clever.
Yeah, isn't it?
They're so the geniuses of the animal world, aren't they?
I mean, I think for humans are the geniuses of the animal world.
Well, I wouldn't.
And dolphins are pretty bright. I think I saw on Blue Planet.
Elephants have just started making their own aspirin, essentially.
But yeah, well, they are fantastically clever, and I love them. But also, they're just big solemn creatures. And so, really, because I didn't actually have any science on this to talk about beyond what I'd read. I wanted to put out a call to our listeners, like, if you find any really exciting elephant news, could you tweet me? And I will periodically update people on elephant news because I love elephants. In fact, I'm going to make them the podcast's official animal.
I mean, I really feel like you should have consulted me.
Sorry.
On that?
Daisy, are you okay with the elephants becoming the official animal of the podcast?
I don't know. You've declared it.
Yeah. I'm ruthless like that.
All right, then. Elephants it is.
There we go. So, yeah, tweet me on at ScienceManSam if you have any exciting elephant news.
We'll weave it into...
I might get a jingle made for elephant news.
No.
Well, that'd be good, actually.
You've gone too far.
Oh.
But, yeah, I would like to know more about elephants.
Good.
Tell me more.
Oh, that's all I've got at the moment.
No, I'm... asking
oh, you're asking. More. This is a plea to the
listeners. Please tell me more about elephants.
I got, instead of a would you rather this week, I've got a slightly different thing, which is science lol of the week. And
is this actually going to be funny?
Well, this is for you to decide. So, I'm going to read you some different examples of science humour that I've come across in the science world.
Oh, God.
You, in a previous episode, you were laughing about fruit fly names, and some of them you enjoyed.
They were very funny.
It's similar. Some of that sort of humour. And I want to see what you think
about... Well, I'm very hard to impress, but we'll give it a go.
Okay. So, going back to fruit fly gene names, yep. There is a gene name that's called Pray for Elves. Right.
Why?
Because the postdoctorate researcher, who apparently is called Susanna Lewis, was incredibly frustrated in the lab, and often you're working hugely long hours with more data to ever get through than you can, with deadlines looming, it's quite stressful. And she prayed for magic elves to help finish her work. And when she then made the discovery of this gene, she decided to call it Pray for Elves. And it's officially called that, and in the research paper, they even put that little anecdote into the paper.
That's so stupid. I feel vaguely embarrassed for her. No, but like, why would you pray to magic elves?
Well, it was a kind of, she was joking.
Oh, was it a joke?
Yeah, it was a joke.
So she didn't really pray to magic elves?
No, she probably wasn't praying for elves. She's just like, sometimes there's so much work to do, you've got to pray for elves to come into the lab
and
help you.
All right, I can go
you.
For that then. I think it's quite sweet, then.
Okay, so not a science lol, but a science...
I'm not rolling in the aisles over that one, but I think it's quite sweet.
Fair enough. Okay, so on astronomical terms, which you've already said you find a bit alien, there's a collection of galaxies that surround... So our closest galaxy is the Andromeda Galaxy.
Right.
We're in the Milky Way. And around that are some much, much bigger... There's 12 much, much bigger galaxies.
Right.
And the name for that is the Council of Giants.
I think that's very apt.
Okay. Good.
Because I've already said I find this all too big to really comprehend.
It is. I mean, it's massive. There's a really cool infographic where it starts with a human and you can scroll left or right and it goes up in sort of size. So it's human, oak tree, redwood, the Empire State Building, and so on. And then you go, and then you'll get like, I don't know, Great Britain, the world, the sun, and you get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you suddenly watch as the sun is now a dot next to a big star, and then that star's a dot next to a galaxy. And you just... And it blows your mind. And then you go the other way and you go down from like human down to like bacteria all the way down to little, what the fundamental things that make us up. And you just realise that at both sides, the scale that we deal with is just beyond comprehension.
It's beyond, imagination as well.
I need to put a link for that somewhere. I might start tweeting some of these.
All right then.
Yeah.
Maybe you should. That
really
pictures
cool.
of elephants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And I also like the idea, because it makes it sound like we have some sort of elders up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Making decisions
it does.
About things.
Yeah, the Council of Giants overseeing us. It's all going to be all right.
Yeah.
Telescopes is a surprising area where funny names are, I thought.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought it.
No. So you were saying about how lack of imagination. Well, it's become a kind of a comedic thing in the telescope world to have a lack of imagination. Now, some of them are imaginative. There is an array of radio telescopes that's called the Multi-Element Radio Linked Interferometer Network, or MERLIN, which I quite like.
Right, and so, shall I tell you one of the things I hate about science?
Acronyms.
Acronyms, the stupid chuffing acronyms, because they're never actually acronyms.
That one is Multi-Element Radio Linked Interferometer Network.
Do you know what? I think you stretch what's possible in acronyms to the very point of credibility.
Yeah, that is true. You know, they spent as long on the acronym as they've spent on the actual design of the project.
They probably came up with the acronym before they came up with the project, and they're like, well, we've got to make one of them now.
Yeah.
The acronym.
We need a telescope. Why? Merlin.
Merlin.
Well, okay, these ones then you'll be happier with. The Large Binocular Telescope. That's its official name. It's a large and it looks like a pair of binoculars.
That just actually made me laugh. Yeah.
Okay. The Very Large Array.
Well, I mean, it's descriptive, sure.
The Massive Monolithic Telescope.
That does sound big.
The next ones I love. Okay. The Very Large Telescope was followed up by the Extremely Large Telescope. And then they cancelled plans for the Overwhelmingly Large Telescope.
Yeah, they're very good.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
That's science law.
Because I was looking for funny stuff in science, just Googling amusing stuff, I came across a study by the University of Warwick where they surveyed loads and loads of people and they just put random words to them, made them rate them on how amusing the words are, and they've now come up with their scientific list of which words in the English language are funniest.
Which is the funniest word.
Yeah, exactly. So some of them are really good. The top five were, or six, were twerp. Like twerp?
Yeah, that's okay.
Egghead?
That's just silly.
Bebop?
No, I think, I think that pushes it too far.
Bebop. Okay. Waddle.
Yeah, waddle's a good one.
Waddle's good. Nitwit?
Yeah, I think that's funny.
Booby.
Yeah, booby.
And the other end of the spectrum, you had things like death and eviscerate and
pain.
Yeah, and like, it was pretty obvious what they were going to be. I thought a little challenge for you would be I'm going to give you four words and then you have to rate them according to science which one you think is funniest.
Right, go on then.
Okay, so hooter.
Right.
Tinkle.
Right.
Ass.
Right.
Tit.
I think ass is the least funny.
Right.
So what? Hooter,
hooter, tinkle and tit. it sounds like a 1970s stage troupe, doesn't it?
Yeah, or a really bad law firm. So I think I'm going to go for tit, tinkle, hooter, ass. No, I'm not. Tit, hooter, tinkle, ass.
Nailed it. Spot on. You've just confirmed what the scientists thought.
Thanks. I've always been good at science.
Four for four there, which I genuinely astounded by.
I'm a scientist, Sam.
I know. I think we established that
and
theology.
And also, as we know, I'm incredibly funny.
Yeah. Yep. As an aside, I was some things which didn't make this podcast, but maybe we'll come back in. One of the things I learned was that geologists actually lick rocks.
I know. I had friends who did geology at university.
Well, and they licked
and
rocks.
And they had to literally go and lick rocks.
And I was thinking, like, does that mean that, like, in the Natural History Museum, where you've got thousands and thousands of rock samples,
all licked?
They've all been licked. And arsenic on this one, for sure.
Apparently, it was they told me, because I was like, why the hell would you lick a rock? And they were like, to see how salty it is.
I just think there's better ways, aren't there? Like, couldn't you just...
I suppose it's the most efficient way.
Vaporise a bit in a mass spectrometer or something.
But I suppose if you're out in the field, you probably haven't got your mass spec with you, have you? So you're like, true. You've got your tongue though, haven't you? So
yeah, I don't even know if Swiss Army Knife do one yet with an attachment.
No, forthcoming though.
Forthcoming, good, yeah.
So I guess you can just lick it and be like, yeah, that's pretty salty.
So your geologist friends licked rocks.
Hmm.
That's nice. I suppose also you could get a bit about texture, like is it a sedimentous rock or...
Because it's grainy. You probably do that with your finger.
No. No time.
No time, I'm in the field. Everything in the mouth.
You know if you go and buy perfume and like you sniff some perfume and then you sniff another and after a while like everything just smells like perfume and you've got no concept of new ones. Do you reckon after a while all these rocks taste the same?
Everything is salty.
Yeah, they're all I've no idea.
I don't know, maybe you have to have a palate cleanse.
Yeah, sorbet in between each.
Or maybe you just have like a really like neutral
rock. A bland rock.
You just suck that for a bit.
I've licked a bit of a... I don't know, antimony, is that a rock? I think
I've
so.
Got no
antimony,
idea.
Yeah. Better just have to cleanse my palate with some shale.
Can someone just give me some granite?
Well, no, I imagine granite's spicy. I don't know. It's got uranium in it, you know, granite. And it's mildly radioactive. And so there's...
I don't like that then.
Like, it's why certain regions of, certainly the UK, but other parts of the world, you have there's slight health risks associated with the bedrock. And you get things radon gas release and stuff from granite.
Who knew? Well, yeah. You did.
But... So all those posh people who've got granite houses.
More for them, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. In a microwave.
Well, I also love you think there's such a thing as a granite house. Look at my granite home.
Well, what's the benefit of it? You don't have to heat it. You don't ever have to cook food. It all emerges cooked. And you'll live to 20.
And if you look at it, it's kind of spicy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's a bit bland. Can I have rubby food on the wall? It'll be fine. That's science for you.
Science, there. God. Love a bit of science.
Well, there we go. That's our little show today. We've rattled through that. As usual, if you've got any comments, want to get in touch, we're on Twitter. I'm at ScienceManSam.
And I'm DaisyGrace88.
And also, of course, any pictures of elephants.
Oh, loads of pictures of elephants.
Well, not pictures of elephants, facts, really. I don't really care.
Can you send me the pictures? Send Sam the facts.
There we go. Picture. You know where you're going to get people doing their elephant impression, though,
don't
aren't you?
Don't do that.
I want to encourage them, but no, do not send Daisy your elephant impression. And if you're not sure what the elephant impression is,
I just
Google
want it. A legit photo of an elephant.
Yes, that's a reasonable request. Yeah. Actually, I've got this friend who he can swim. He hasn't got, but he hasn't got arms or legs.
Oh God!
Call him Clever Dick.
No.
I'm no, really sorry. Struggling with these knob jokes now.
They're we not... all are.
Well, anyway, that's the end of the show. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Science with knob jokes.